This podcast was recorded on the 4th of July. Throughout this podcast with a K, I felt the looming threat of the American forces of Casterbra soldiers Brian Terranova and Patrick Riley. Lacking the backup of supreme force of Casterbra's king with a vindicae Christian Corley, I valiantly fought off their flanks, but was unable to prevent them from securing independence and eventually creating America's next top model. I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry. Bonnie Lankford.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Casterbra's podcast with a K. Christian, it has the week off again, so joining me this week will be, as usual, James McLean.
Hello.
And Patrick Riley.
How's it going?
Sweet. All right. What are we talking about today, guys?
Well, you introduced it. You should be telling us what we're talking about.
I agree.
You can't
put that stuff on me. All right.
You can't be the leader. You can't take the opportunity of leading us in without being able to give us the goods. It's like leading an army without supplying the weapons. I want my weapons.
You want your arsenal. Okay. I will throw at you big finish license renewal. How do you guys feel about that?
I think it's good news.
Good news. All right, James.
I think it's good news. I think I'd be a pretty bit of an arse-ish cad if I suggested otherwise. Do you both listen to the Big Finish stuff?
I was just going to ask the same. I do. I've heard... I listen to mainly the main range. I don't necessarily do the Companion Chronicles, if I should mention that. But yeah, I do. Definitely do. And, of course, the Lost Stories and the McGann plays. Like, anyone that's fully scripted Doctor Who, you know? What about you, Patrick?
Well, I've got to be honest. I'm not too up-to-date with any of the audios, not just Big Finish. Now, tell me something. This is probably more a question for James since he's living in the UK, but on the ones that air on BBC Radio, are those ever Big Finish or are they all just the BBC produced stuff?
Actually, they're now actually airing Big Finish ones on the BBC Radio 7, I think it is. I think it's their seventh dimension. They did the Peter Davison ones that were released a couple of years ago, which chronicled tales with the companion Nyssa alongside Turlough and Tegan. Which was a big thing because it was the first time Janet Fielding had really come back to the Doctor Who fold, so to speak, I think. So again, and I don't want to get into canon debates, but I always find it a bit disappointing when you look on Wikipedia or somewhere and they say Big Finish are an extended universe and is not subject to canon, it's up to the audience to, and you think, oh, don't be silly. God's sake, it's got Peter Davison. It's got the whole cast. It's written by people associated with Doctor Who. It's given its license by the BBC. It's been aired by the BBC. Forget your little continuity issues. Just enjoy it. So, yes.
I agree with you. And I will say that I can be a bit stingy when it comes to the books and so on, because I've tried to read a couple of the books over the years, and I just never really got a Doctor Who feel from a lot of the ones that I tried, or I didn't feel that they had the character the way I knew. And it's one of the reasons why I gravitate towards Big Finish, because as you said, it is the real actors. It is... written by, well, not all of them, but written by a lot of the people from the show and then a lot of new people, but it's licensed by the BBC and it's just as close as you can get to the TV show without visuals. And not to down the books, I'm sure there are plenty of great ones out there. Maybe I've just read some ones that just didn't take to me and so on, but I just don't see how, if you can have the real actors and it's licensed by the BBC, that you could discount it straightforward,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'd like to say as well, because we were talking last week about Mark Gatiss. Oh, Gatiss, I can never remember how to pronounce it.
Yeah, I know.
His book, Nightshade, which was one of the very early ones in the Virgin New Adventures, was a very, very good book. So if you're thinking about Mark still from last week in a dreamy or sensible fashion, if you can find Nightshade out there on eBay, that's a good read. That's one of the books of his, which I think is well worth reading. The Companion Chronicles are actually very good. I've actually delved into a couple of late. I never thought I would, for the same sort of reason, because it's not actually a play of characters. It's generally a narrative, basically, a monologue. But I've listened to I listened to one of Carol Ann Ford's the other day as well, which was also very, very good. So there's a lot of good stuff in the audio range. So I think it's brilliant that Big Finish has kept its license because they do such justice. And they kept it going when we didn't have Doctor Who.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They definitely filled the gap for me for many years. And one of my favorite things is, of course, the Paul McGann years. You know, like he has an era now. He has a full span of stories rather than just the one.
and Colin Baker as well, because there's so many people who have come back and said that their favourite Big Finish doctor is Colin Baker. So it's kind of lovely that he's had an opportunity to come back to the fold and actually show his character again, take a slightly different slant on it with some good writing, and get the credit that he deserves as an actor. So
I will say with the Companion Chronicles, the ones that Fraser Hines does are great. They're brilliant because he does a fantastic Patrick Troughton. And I think that's like one of the Companion Chronicles' strengths, is maybe telling stories for the first and second Doctors and third Doctors now as well. I would rather see those than see them do like a fifth, fourth, or, you know, all the way up. Just because if you have the other actors and you can tell full stories with their main Doctors, I would much rather see that. They're more attractive to me. The Companion Chronicles are fun, but I've only heard a handful, and they were all right, but every time there's a full story, a fully casted story, they grab me better. But the ones with Fraser Hines, and I have heard others, not just with his, but those really grab me, because when he does Pat Troughton, you know, it's not 100% on, but it's just so close. It's so good.
You were mentioning Paul McGann audios, Big Finish, but just I was going to say with audios in general, that's kind of one of the reasons why I am kind of not happy that I haven't got into them yet, and I'm probably going to at some point. I just haven't got there yet. But the whole idea that the Eighth Doctor has more than just San Francisco, two stories that he has to tell. He's got probably just as many as there are, as multiple Doctors would have now on TV.
And the thing is, we always knew with the TV show that the adventures that we saw weren't the only adventures these Doctors had. So inserting adventures in between current stories, you know, Paul McGann's era notwithstanding, because, you know, he has a complete era, but slotting stories in between adventures that we had seen or in between seasons just makes perfect sense, because we know that things happened there. They even sometimes talk about it, or would start a story at the end of an adventure and you didn't know what had happened, you know, so they fill the gaps nicely. But Patrick, you started with the new series, your interest in Doctor Who. Have you gotten into any of the older Doctors yet? Like, is there a Doctor that you'd want to start a Big Finish series with?
Well, I think the majority of, in just speaking in terms of Doctors in general that I've seen of the classic Doctors, I think I've seen quite a bit of William Hartnell. And I've seen quite a bit of Colin Baker. So I might be able to get into Colin Baker Big Finish Adventures, but really any of them. I've seen a little bit of Sylvester McCoy. I've seen a fair few Tom Baker episodes. So, and I might even really start getting into it once Tom Baker's episodes are released. And I forget when they're coming out, but fairly soon now, I would think.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to the Tom Baker ones. What, you've seen a lot of Colin Baker. Is he a particular favorite of yours now, or did you just somehow start there?
I don't know specifically why I started watching a lot of Colin Baker. I think the idea, because I'd read a little about The Trial of a Time Lord, and I think the whole idea of that whole serial, just the arc behind it and everything, kind of interested me, so I checked that out, and I've seen Vengeance on Varos, or Varos, however you say it, also, and I think maybe one or two others, I can't remember.
Well, I think the beautiful thing with the Big Finish plays, and James can hopefully back me up on this, is with Colin Baker, he had a plan. He had like a longer than 7-year plan to stay in the role of the Doctor, and he wanted to start with this crotchety old man type character and mellow. And Big Finish just does that beautifully. They've mellowed the character. They found the character that should have been on TV.
In the audio plays where they've got Evelyn, isn't it? It's a far older companion. Must be one of the oldest companions that they've ever had for a Doctor.
Absolutely.
Which, again, just creates such an interesting dynamic. So, he's allowed to mellow. He mellowed out a bit in Trial of the Time Lord, I think. He mellowed out quite considerably when he came back for that season. But he's better in the Big Finish series, definitely. And I still think a lot of that is just simply is the material. It's material, and he's comfortable. He knows what he wants to produce. Same with Peter Davison. Peter Davison's Doctor in the Big Finish ones, I find, is a little more short-tempered, a tiny little bit more gruff. He's got a little more personality than perhaps he had as the dashing youngster on screen.
Absolutely.
So it gives them a little chance to reinvent themselves. And McCoy, again, McCoy gets a chance to explore a little more of the darker side he was trying in the last two seasons. And then, of course, the new adventures really pushed through in the books. So, yeah, I think it gives them all. So it'll be interesting to see what Tom Baker gets out of them.
I heard the first series of the plays that Tom Baker did this year, the
The Hornet's
Nest.
Hornet's Nest, yeah.
I have to be honest and say I was not taken with them because they did do a kind of like, they were confusing, I found, because it was kind of like a narrated story with a narrative within the story with conversations that were narrated in the story. And I just found that that was just like way too much narrative and far less, full-scale audio drama. And while the stories were good and they got better toward the end when a lot of the narrative could be dulled down because we learned pretty much all we needed to know about the story, they got better. I'm so much more looking forward to see what Big Finish can do with a fully scripted audio drama. And now that Tom has, kind of dipped his toe in the water of the character again, it should be nice to see in a full play that he's already got that kind of maybe like awkward start out of the way.
Here's a question for you both, and I know we've got to move on to other things. Should the TV show acknowledge Big Finish? I mean, I don't know whether this could be a little to do with licensing. It might not be just so much to do with the choice of the people who are running the show. But should the show throw a shout out to the extended medias? There does seem to be a very careful treading, and I know there was a very careful treading between Big Finish and BBC Books. When they were running in tandem, not to tread on each other's media, they were very keen to keep separate. And I can appreciate exactly why the TV show doesn't want to get bogged down. But I've always been surprised that there's never been even there's been about a couple of instances where people have suggested there's been a nod to the books. There was the use of Lucifer in the 2005 series. I think it was Lucifer. I think it's Lucifer Rising. There was a planetary reference which could have been linked to the books. And in the original outline that Russell T. Davis made for the 2005 series, he used the continuity that had ran through the books as well. But generally speaking, there's been nothing towards Big Finish or the books in particular. I mean, I just kind of feel that nothing plot-worthy, nothing sort of that the people are watching have to understand, but it'd be nice to have a nice, a small acknowledgement, perhaps a tiny reference.
They'll throw in the Doctor will say he met King Edward or so on, some famous figure, or mention some event that he was at or so on. And a lot of times they just make them up and they throw it out there. And, it could potentially ruin future stories for other writers if they're like, well, the Doctor already mentioned meeting King Edward. Well, now we can't really write this story, But if you throw out a reference to a Big Finish play or to a book and you're just making it a throwaway line, something for the Doctor to babble about, or just something that may in some way give the audience an idea that the Doctor's kind of been in a situation like this before, that's fine. Because then they can actually reference it and go, hey, there's a Big Finish play about this. I can look that up and I can listen to it. But if you make them have to go listen to it to understand what's going on, then it won't work.
It's different, I agree.
I think one interesting thing, though, is you mentioned that there were a couple references to books and so on. And one thing that I found interesting is if you look at the books if you look at the radio dramas, rather, that kind of influenced TV stories, they took Spare Parts, which was the influence of Rise of the Cybermen,
yeah.
And then you take Jubilee, which was the influence for Dalek. And when they did both of those radio dramas, they changed the stories around so much while keeping the same basic idea that the Sixth Doctor Jubilee story and the Fifth Doctor Spare Parts could still act as their own individual story separate from the new series, Tenth Doctor stories that are Ninth and Tenth Doctor stories that they influence. But then you take a story like Human Nature, and they kind of didn't change it around so much that how can you believe that both the Seventh Doctor and the Tenth Doctor had this same adventure? So they kind of trot on the book's continuity a little bit while keeping the Big Finish one alone. And I found that interesting that they kind of took that angle.
And I totally agree with the philosophy that you should always make sure that what's good for television is more important than what's good for continuity or what's good for history. I remember sort of very, very briefly having a forum message with Paul Cornell on that. And I think Lance Parkin, again, and I'm going to promote it again, I'm his little hoe, A History, his book there, and they talk about this. With Human Nature, I mean, there's so many ways you can get around that. And I've always said before, as soon as you've got a buffer like the Time War, you can do anything. Time can reinvent itself. Time War could have just taken out pockets of adventures or rewritten pockets of adventures, allowing things like Big Finish and and the BBC books to work on separate continuities, and it could even reinvent holes in time a second time. So you could have the Seventh Doctor's Human Nature adventure punched out by the Time War, and the occurrence in the Tenth Doctor is time healing that wound by sort of making the events happen again in a slightly different way, because time's slightly different. You can get round it all. I still think it would be nice that if the books and the Big Finish had a few, just occasional, as you say, throw out lines to them. Sorry, listen or read those things, can sort of say, oh, hey, yeah, that happened.
It probably is licensing. But the interesting thing is Big Finish kind of went down your Time War theory. Well, the Time War theory, I guess, because I agree with you on that, by the way, that, you know, we can pretty much do anything and chalk it up to the Time War now. But what's interesting is when Big Finish did their version of Shada with the Eighth Doctor, they did it based on the premise that there was footage from Shada used in the Five Doctors.
Yes.
So the Fourth Doctor lived out the adventure of Shada with K-9 and Romana, and then by the time of the Five Doctors, got pulled out of time during that adventure, and when they got freed from the time eddy that they were in, they just left. They didn't live out that adventure. It didn't happen anymore. So he lived it, and then it became a non-event, and then the Eighth Doctor remembered, wait a minute, we never did this. And so he lived the adventure again, time essentially fixing itself. So I do like that Time War theory, and Big Finish kind of already did that, which was really neat. Would you guys like to see Big Finish do stories with the 9th, 10th, or 11th Doctors?
You read my mind. I was actually, yeah, going to bring up, like, what would happen if, say, maybe 20 years from now, we get Matt Smith, David Tennant, and Big Finish doing, you know, their own stories that are different from the TV or whatever. And maybe they could even, I guess the current people in Big Finish would probably be really, really old at that point. But maybe they could, say, have David Tennant meet up with the Fifth Doctor again or something. But who knows?
I think, like, the 50th anniversary is coming up. I think the BBC should have maybe like freed up their license a little bit to bring these guys together for a big deal.
And who says they haven't, really?
Good point.
They're keeping a lot of things secret, it seems.
But I mean, what they should do is, for those actors that are getting on a bit, they should pre-record their lines now, and then when they're dead, use those lines 10, 15 years later with, say, David Tennant, who should still be alive, and they can sort of do that. I it would be crass or tasteless at all.
Is it horrible of me? This morning I was thinking about the new series and how, you know, we're not sure what we're getting, but they're planning something for the big 50th. And I thought, if they're planning something for the big 50th and it's involving all of the previous doctors in some way, maybe they should be recording those things now, just in case.
Yes,
and
right.
I thought that's kind of horrible of me, but it just seemed like it made sense. I mean, Tom's getting up there in age, and I worry about that, and I don't want him to go anywhere. But if it's a matter of they have a script, and then, you know, unfortunately he passes before it, but they could have filmed it in the gap year, you know, like, just film it already, you know?
I'd love to see them broach that idea to him. And I think, to be honest, out of all the doctors, he probably would quite find that amusing and do it.
He probably would.
But, how old is Tom now?
Tom Baker is indeed 77, though, I'll give you that, and I'll come back in. Here we go.
Well, maybe that could be a good segue to your next story. And I'm looking forward to hearing your segue now that will link 77 with Matt in LA.
All right, you ready? Here it goes.
Here we go.
So, Tom Baker is 77, but I'll tell you what, how about Matt in LA? Okay,
wow.
No, seriously though, what do we think of this? Like, is Doctor Who getting put on hold because Matt wants to go to LA, just like the series got put on a sort of hold because David Tennant wanted to do Shakespeare or Hamlet rather? You know, what do you guys think of that?
I think Matt's just taking advantage of the situation right now. I think because I'm all for the speculation really that says that this whole shift in the wind in terms of scheduling is really to put the show back in sort of the winter months, and that's, I feel like they're just sort of making an excuse to do that, and it has nothing to do with what Matt wants to do personally.
James?
I don't know. I hope not. I could understand, to be quite honest, why he would, because he's a young actor. There is, I mean, while none of the recent Doctors can really be said of being caught with typecasting, there is always that fear.
Sure.
So I could understand from his personal point of view, as a person who's looking to continue acting, paid acting through his life, whether it's through opportunity or whether it's because there's been words about whether he would like to, that he explores other options. I don't think Doctor Who or its fans should hold any of the Doctors to this notion that they have to stay in for 3, 4, 5, 6 years because it's Doctor Who, because it's a great role. Well, yeah, it's a great role to watch, but as an actor, you know, you're not there just to play one simple role. You know, you're an actor because you're addicted to this idea of exploring personalities. So I could sort of understand why he would go and look at it. I agree with Patrick. I don't think he's probably pushing to do extra stuff, but while there's gaps, I imagine that he's not going to not explore the opportunities out there. And as I say, I think he'd be a bit mad not to. So, I mean, even if he does decide to start moving on, say next year, if we get an announcement next year that he's finishing as a Doctor, I think we'll have seen a nice transition for his character through the period. He doesn't feel like he's been underdeveloped as he perhaps did in the first season. This season feels like it's done a lot for him.
Oh, I agree. This season definitely brought a lot more of not only his character, but all the other characters. I think River has become more likable. Yeah. I think Amy has become a little bit less bossy. She's still got it, but it's kind of more in a playful way now. And they kind of like throw in little smiles and so on when she does it with Rory. Because, you know, kind of almost thought she treated Rory a little poorly, a little bit in the first season, but not as much as Rose, Mickey, you know?
Yes.
But, you know, I agree. I think this season kind of found its footing in a way, and that's not a slight to Series 5, because it was a very good series, but this one found its footing a bit. But speaking of Karen and Matt, they are going to be at Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, this very month, and I can't go. Patrick, what about you?
It's a little far away.
Why do they announce these things so late? Like, I would have tried to buy tickets for this thing if I had known they were going. I missed them in New York, and now I'm missing them in L.A.
I think they need to come to Austin or Dallas or something so I can get in on this.
Yeah, right? Ugh, that's killer.
No.
But San Diego Comic-Con, anybody ever planning on making it? I have friends who go every year, and they absolutely adore it. It's huge. Tons of events, tons of exclusives, tons of panels, and they just say, you know, it can't be beat. But
yeah,
I haven't
seen it. You see, the problem is though, is that while there's all these cool people there to see and all this merchandise, it's filled with fans, and I really don't like fans. I find them annoying.
James, you're talking to two fans right now.
I find you annoying. They get in the way, cues of them talking their silly gobbledygook and their language, feeling no fear. They should be feeling fear. They should be oppressed by society. They should be shunned. And San Diego Comic Con comes along and they feel that they can waltz around the street in their Star Trek uniforms, in their Dalek faces, and it's totally acceptable. Well, it's not. So no, I won't be going. Actually, I'm going to Dragon Con this year, so I'll be down there in Atlanta.
Who are you going to dress as, James?
I'll be coming as myself, which is a costume in itself, probably. So yes, I'm going for other reasons. I
thought about trying to go to that, but just a little bit too late. I went to the Wizard World Comic Con this year, and it was fun. And the thing is, there are tons of people dressed up, and I think taking it a back a little bit, if you're dressing every day in your Star Trek uniform or your Doctor Who uniform, that's maybe a bit excessive or a bit odd. But if you go to these conventions, I realize this past convention that I just went to, that's part of the fun. If you go not dressed in a costume, it's you don't quite get as much attention. People don't quite talk to you quite as much. But when you go in a costume or so on, like, everybody talks to you. It's like their own elite little club, and it was very interesting, very unique, and it's actually got me wondering if I shouldn't maybe break out the Tennant gear one year and go to one. But
it's silly, really, because I totally agree. I'm only joking. I know a lot of people do them. I know people who run these conventions as well, and they're fun, great people. And I have friends who do cosplays. I used to be very close to a girl who used to go into LA and used to get the whole rubber thing for the Batgirl costumes and stuff. And
oh wow.
you know, go the full hog. And they loved it. They absolutely adored it. And I seriously do not look down on anyone who does that. I look down on people who sneer at that, quite honestly, because those people who sneer at that are the ones who are probably wearing their football T-shirts every day.
Exactly. So exactly. And I think we've talked about this before, but I totally agree with you on that.
Exactly. You know, just let people be who they are and stop worrying about what other people are doing and just enjoy your life.
I've got to tell you, some of these costumes that they wear are fantastic.
Oh, they are.
Some of them are very impressive that they can pull together. And I know, and I know being in the prop world myself, that some of them are a group effort, you know, like in order to get a prop that's exacting, there's lots of measurements, there's lots of research, and there's lots of skill put behind making it, as well as lots of money. You know, you join a group. I have a couple of Sonic screwdrivers and a Seventh Doctor umbrella that a lot of skill, research, and money put together, you know, and they're great. They're brilliant stuff.
Yes.
And it's a brilliant hobby. They dedicate themselves to it, just like anybody who would build their bird feeders for the backyard. Or
fishing, you know. Fishing. You could laugh.
Sports memorabilia.
It's all the same. It's just the same mindset, just different objects. So,
But speaking of hobbies, do you guys collect anything, Doctor Who-wise or otherwise? Do you collect the Doctor Who toys, for example, or props?
No. I did. I have a couple of things. But I tended to find that they just started to, about 10, 20 years ago, I used to collect sort of have figures. I quite like to have them in packets. Before that, I used to have comics. But I used to find whenever I'd move, it became such a faff to move everything. Oh, and they were just sitting in attics and stuff. So I stopped.
Patrick, what about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of along the same lines as James here. I've got, you know, maybe in terms of Who memorabilia, I've got a couple posters, maybe a Dalek figure or two. But, you know, other than that, I mostly just haven't really gotten into that kind of thing.
Do you guys find it upsetting, just quickly before you go on to whatever you were going to go on to?
Yes.
Because I know what you were going to go on to.
Yes.
Because I have the same email. I was going to say, do you find it upsetting to the 7-year-old in you? Because I'm assuming that we're roughly about the same sort of ages, that when you were 7, that there was none of this stuff.
Yes.
You know, the only canine that you could get, and it was the best thing that came out in the late 70s, was one with, which had a little voice activated thing, discs in the bottom, and that was it. Police boxes, you'd be bloody lucky if you found a police box. There was the Dennis Fisher one, which looked terrible in the 70s, and that was it. Nothing more than a tin money box that you could get in the 80s. Does it, until DePaul started doing some fairly substandard stuff later on. Does that upset you that you all this stuff now and you see it and you think, as a kid, I would have killed for that?
Here's my story. It does upset me, and I would have killed for all those things. So when Character Options started their Doctor Who toy line, I bought a David Tennant, I bought a Dalek and a Rose, okay? And I thought, this is cool, and a TARDIS. And they had a money bank TARDIS.
I thought, this is cool.
Yeah, it was neat, right? It looked good. You had a TARDIS on your desk. It was great.
Exactly.
And I thought, just like James, just like you, this is too much. I have the props that I like. They're small. They're easy to travel, you know? But this is too much. I can't have all this. I can't pack all this. Well, I was gifted a fair amount of Doctor Who toys. And if you know what collecting toys is like, or collecting anything is like, it could be sort of an addiction in a way. And I was in the middle of a move, so I have a couple of boxes just full of these things rather than on my shelves. If you'd like to see my Doctor Who toy collection, go to the Cerberus fan page on Facebook, and you can see all my fun stuff there. That's my little service announcement, by the way. But no, I collect this stuff now. I'm into it. The 7-year-old in me has completely come out and wants it all. And, you know, talking about the San Diego Comic-Con brings up that every year they do a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive for Doctor Who toys. They always make them things that you really want, usually things that you really want. And then they make them such limited numbers. And it's like, you know how many fans out there want this stuff? It's not little 7-year-old kids that are going, Mommy, I need that exclusive figure that's at the San Diego Comic-Con and you have to get it for me. They don't have a clue. They don't know. It's the fans that go nuts for it. And you limit them. You know, and this year we've got Riversong and the Pandorica chair. Riversong in one of her most iconic outfits and the Pandorica chair, and you're making it exclusive to the San Diego Comic-Con. Not even to England. You're making it exclusive to San Diego Comic-Con. How does that make any sense?
What did they do last year? I think they had like the 11th Doctor and what was it?
Oh, that
orange
Dalek?
Dalek figure
Yeah,
or something.
that was easy to pass up for me. Sorry,
Yes.
everybody in the new series, but those Daleks are awful.
Yes. Yes. It's.
But if I remember right from those, I think that set was eventually given after maybe 2 or 3 months or something. I think that was released to the public. It just, I could be wrong on that.
No, no, you're actually right. That did make the rounds later on.
Again, it's like the River Song thing. It's if they end up doing that, it won't be for a good while. And
yeah,
right now it's just people who are able to be in San Francisco who can have it. So,
well, I'll put it to you this way too: if they release that figure, that version of that figure, solo or maybe in a pack later on, and I didn't get the chair, I wouldn't be heartbroken. I don't necessarily need all like the big things in the world, but I specifically wanted that figure. That was where I thought kind of looked the coolest. And this is like definitely the 7-year-old in me talking here, but I just thought she looked cool. But you're actually right, Patrick. A lot of the exclusives do somehow make the rounds later on. They're still in limited numbers, but they become available in some way, or they'll release a figure from the pack in some other way. Like, for instance, Peter Davison in the Time Crash set was the only way you could get him with Celery originally, aside from one other kind of like in-house product that they did or something like that. But they eventually then released him with Celery. But you couldn't get that that variation of that David Tennant figure that was in there. They never really released him another way. So a lot of the San Diego Comic-Con sets did come out. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, when they do the Comic-Con exclusives, I think Forbidden Planet might actually get them for England as well. So this this exclusive River set may also be available in England. But
lucky us.
Right, yeah. Well, just James, just go out and buy it right away, man. You know what? There's one you guys have that we don't. The Doctor Who Experience has an Amelia Pond figure, and you can only buy it at the Doctor Who Experience. You can't get it here. Hey, go ahead and buy it and send it to me.
I think we're running about over time now.
As usual.
Yeah. As usual.
Any final thoughts? No? No? All right.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I had to edit out of the last podcast, so people won't have heard that we announced that the date for Torchwood would be the 7th or the 8th, which was wrong. Hence, it was cut out of the podcast. It's the 14th, I believe. Is that not right?
That is correct.
Thank God you're here, Patrick. I don't know it.
Yes,
14th. You know what's awful about that, though? Tomorrow there is a free screening of Torchwood at the Ritz in Philadelphia. That is like 20 minutes from me. I volunteered to work a double shift for one of my coworkers who went on vacation. So I cannot go to this free screening in a city that is 20 minutes from me.
How could you?
Right?
How could you be dedicated to your job and miss Torchwood? I just don't understand.
I know. I can't go to San Diego Comic-Con. I can't go see this free screening of Torchwood. That's just, it's rough. It's a rough life.
I don't know. If Christian hears about this, it's going to be Casterbrus without a B.
I know, I might get sacked.
You know. Well, luckily you won't ever hear this.
Very good. Oh, all right. All right. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you coming back each week. And tune in next week when we have more fun things for you to talk about.